I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
You have, like, extra money.
I do have extra money. Does someone need clean energy? It's kind of expensive.
My coal just went down by one.
Heat waves.
Two heat waves.
Is that even legal?
What are those people up to?
They're volunteers testing out a new board game. In the face of our climate emergency, games might seem like a waste of valuable time.
But games that engage us in visualizing and talking about climate solutions can be a route to serious action.
That's what got me interested in making my own climate game. Our county is developing a climate action plan, and local activists like myself want it to be an effective one that doesn't end up on a shelf.
That could easily happen, because while most folks here support the concept of climate action, their enthusiasm can quickly turn to apathy or even opposition when said action gets too close to home. A solar farm in your neighborhood, metered parking where it's always been free, a tax increase, God forbid, for better bus service, you can count on opposition.
Change is hard, and the temptation is great to shoot down new projects one by one. But if we could show people the big picture, how much we have to do and how little time, and what's going to happen if we don't. And if we get them involved in choosing the solutions, maybe the supporters would outnumber the resistors.
Let's face it. Most people won't turn up to see boring PowerPoint presentations about something we'd rather not face to begin with.
So that's how I ended up making a game. And in the process, met some really interesting people. Dargan Frierson is a climate scientist. He started making games 10 years ago with a team at the University of Washington.
No one was really listening to what we were saying. And we needed to get more messages out there in different ways that people would actually pay attention to.
The climate scientists hope games will get people to listen, but they also blunt the pain of not being listened to.
We made a game called Deal, A Green New Election. In the aftermath of this statewide initiative in Washington for a carbon tax and investment scheme that was put forth by community climate justice organizations, some of the folks in our team actually worked on the steering committee and seemed to be doing well in the pollings. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of big oil companies from out of state invested a tremendous amount of money to get this initiative shot down. We made the game really just to deal with our own emotions about the campaign, to kind of express it in some way.
It's a kind of gamified lessons learned about dealing with misinformation. Sort of, here is what we wish we'd said.
One example of a choice that you can make in the game is when a young child says, "My dad works in the fracking industry. Is this going to mean that he loses his job?" And you have to go through very carefully and answer several responses in the right order.
Now they're working on a new game.
Visions of the future, where you can set up your own planet with different amounts of real solutions like solar power and wind power, just transition for workers and community-based energy sources, has a simple climate model that takes carbon dioxide emissions and methane and nitrous oxide and air pollution, turns all of that into forecasts of temperature rise and other extreme weather events. So if people can see exactly how quickly we have to make a change.
It's clear that scaring people doesn't work, but games that enlist our imagination in positive ways may help us move from fear and paralysis to action.
You really do have to let people envision what the world can be like. There's really a lot of benefits. So if we allow folks to envision those futures, allow players to be able to see that they do have agency, that they can actually make a difference. It's a great thing that games can allow you to do.
Dargan and his colleagues bring their games to museums, science fairs, and other public events.
Kids or adults come by who are a little bit bored by the other booths, and they see a game and just come running. And we find that a lot of times those folks will stick around and talk with us about the science and have some good conversations.
They've also created an online interactive tool that helps people have these conversations on their own.
It's a conversation starter designed to facilitate intergenerational conversations. It starts by you entering everybody's birthday, and then it comes up with things like when so-and-so was 10 years old. That was when there was the first image of the Earth from space. What would you feel like if you were the first person to see that kind of image? We've given that as an extra credit opportunity in our global warming class, usually right around Thanksgiving when a lot of students are going home and maybe have some chances to talk with their family about what they're studying in college. And a lot of the students have written that they've had some really important experiences with their families, some times where they've really been able to share the younger generation's concern about climate issues and have some pretty deep conversations with their older family members.
While Dargan comes from the science side, Matt Leacock is a professional game developer.
Board games have been a passion of mine since I was a little kid. I was probably like 6 when I made my first game.
Why board games?
They're social. They bring people around a table. They're interactive problem-solving experiences. Each board game is its own little system. You can't just sit down and let the game get projected at you and you respond, you know, like in a Twitch fashion at a video game. Relationships play out through the course of play without necessarily having to make these big cognitive leaps. You can just sort of experience them.
Matt's pretty well known in the gaming world as the creator of Pandemic.
Not the Pandemic, but a board game which came out in 2007, where players pretend to be a team of epidemiologists fighting off 4 deadly viruses around the world. Over the years, it has multiplied and mutated into various editions and versions.
That was my first published board game.
That's pretty impressive for a first game.
I made a lot of substandard games prior to that. I think every game designer has to create a few dozen pretty terrible games, or maybe even 100, I don't know, before they can do something worth talking about.
He might as well have said, shut up and don't do this show, because I made my first board game and we're going to talk about it. If I'd met Matt first, I might have given up on this project, but I've gone too far now. When Matt first looked into making a climate game, it was hard to see how it could be any fun.
I did some early research and it was just like going through a trough of despair, and eventually found some books that really were more constructive in the way they were framing it and started to see the outlines of what a game could be. Daybreak is a game for 1 to 4 players who are trying to take on the climate crisis. And each player represents a world power. So you might be the United States or Europe, China, or the global South. And you're all working to decarbonize your economies while also protecting your people. Each round, you roll out new clean energy plants, you decommission dirty energy plants, you build up the resilience of your society. All the world powers emit carbon. Some of it gets sequestered, and the rest piles up and accumulates. And as that accumulation rises and rises, it's indexed to a certain quantity of crisis cards. And those crisis cards get worse the higher the temperatures. It's a very compounding effect. So it's quite scary when you're playing it. You understand how important immediate action is.
I asked Matt, what makes a game good?
You can really get people involved in what they're doing. If you give them an emotional journey, in the same way that a really compelling story has lots of highs and lows, if your game can bring them through lots of ups and downs, they'll be drawn into it. When you see that the carbon emitted that round is decreased significantly, that makes you feel great. But then you see the effects of the accumulated carbon on the planet and may bleach out some coral, or the Earth may sequester less carbon. And then the crisis cards come out that might endanger lots of your population due to water shortages, or you name it. So it's this back and forth of these upbeats from the feelings of progress contrasted with the downbeats of the effects of change, leading to kind of a crescendo at the end where you either succeed and reach net zero without endangering too many people, or you don't. And it's a race between these positive feedback loops of investment in solutions versus tipping points and all the negative effects that the climate throws at you.
And it wouldn't be a board game without some little plastic pieces. Protecting your people from climate's negative effects earns resilience tokens.
We've represented resilience in little shields that you collect. They either have a little sprout on them for ecology, a bridge for infrastructure, or hands kind of grasping each other in solidarity for society.
Where climate games differ from most other games is that they're grounded in scientific fact.
In other games, I've just kind of chased whatever felt great. It's a much harder problem to come at it from the research first, because you have to go through this process of building up a very simplified model and then play it and see, hey, is this working as a game? And then try to figure out how to modify it in order to make it more engaging and more interesting. Trying to maintain a certain level of fidelity to the science while also making a really engaging game is pretty challenging.
It could also be a little emotionally challenging. Like, imagine making Pandemic in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, this does feel different sitting in California. You've got wildfires and, you know, you have to put the N95 masks on to go outside sometimes. You read the news stories about the kelp forests off the coast that are shrunk 95% in the past 3 years. And, you know, it's very immediate in a way that when I was working on Pandemic, SARS had hit, but that was half a world away and it didn't feel nearly as immediate. It has an immediacy to it that has made the design feel much more urgent to finish. The rate of change is actually enough that, you know, a year might make a difference.
How can playing a game change anything?
These games can provide a context for conversations, and a certain thing might happen, and there's the perfect fertile ground for a conversation about what just happened, whether it's a given crisis or a certain technology, a certain policy. Daybreak provides this huge smorgasbord of different starting points for those types of conversations. My hope is that not only does it provide a springboard for these conversations, but and normalize talking about this sort of thing, but kind of points in the direction where people can make a difference. You can see what kinds of things would make an impact in the game. And then, you know, by extension, think about, oh, you know what? It's not just about recycling drinking straws.
This is Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. We're talking about the change-making power of games.
The big thing I learned from Matt is that making a game is an iterative process of repeated trial and error. I was having a lot of ups and downs myself, thinking I had my game finished, only to discover more flaws as people played. Matt says that's just how games are made. Those people we heard at the start of the show, they were testing out a version of his game that has changed dramatically since then, and the development is still in process. The final product won't be ready till next year. I felt encouraged after our conversation. Matt said,
everybody can make a game. It's not rocket science.
Sam Levac-Levy has actually worked on rockets as a mechanical engineer, but he also has a strong dedication to preserving life on Earth. I asked him if he remembers when he first realized it was in danger.
I remember the exact moment. I was in grade 4, and our teacher had us come into the classroom and just told us to stare at the clock for a minute and did not explain whatsoever why. So we were all just kind of like bored out of our minds and staring at the clock. And at the end of the minute, she said, well, X amount of acres of the rainforest was just cut down. I don't remember the exact number, obviously, but I just could not stop looking back at the clock throughout the rest of the day and the rest of the week and just visualizing all those forests getting cut down. And that's really when I started caring about the environment, which then morphed into climate as I got older. 99% of people in the world are not actively engaging with climate at all, even if they care about it. Games tap into something really innate in people, and people just naturally want to win at things. We want to achieve goals. One of the reasons that video games are so successful is that the creators of these games have figured out how to precisely dole out just the right amount of reward to get people engaged and motivated to then achieve the next reward. And that works even if the reward is completely meaningless. Maybe you can upgrade your character with like a new haircut. We're trying to apply those same techniques of gamification to something that actually really matters. Just in the fact that it's a game and has a goal already gets people engaged.
Sam's game, called Solutions, is based on the work of a group called Drawdown.
They basically took a team of 200 experts and analyzed as many climate solutions as they could come across. And they ended up ranking them based on impact, came up with this really unique and surprising list. When people think of climate solutions, they think of solar panels, electric cars, and those solutions are very, very important and they're in the game. But the truth is there's so much more out there that most people just never think about. If you look at, for example, we have two solutions in the game about improving rice cultivation. And who would ever think of that as a climate solution? But the fact is that over 3 billion people in the world rely on rice as a staple crop, and producing rice creates a lot of methane. If I just stopped a random person on the street and was like, hey, do you want to spend 5 minutes thinking about improved rice production with me? They'd probably run in the opposite direction. But now we can ask that very same question in a game, and people get super enthusiastic about it. Of course they want to debate how much impact improved rice production can have compared to refrigerant management, for example, or electric cars.
Drawdown ranks its solutions by their potential, and in Sam's game, players have to order their solution cards by rank.
Players propose these climate solutions next to each other, and then we're going to have a group discussion about which solution we think can have more impact.
Get it right, and the temperature goes down. Get it wrong, and it goes the other way.
We get a lot of engagement. People just reach into their minds and into their experiences. Even if they've never heard about the solution before, they can still find reasons to debate one way or another.
The game can be played at three levels of difficulty: medium, hard, and extra hard.
Medium starts in the year 1990, when scientific consensus was just like crystal clear that climate is real and is a threat. And so it's a nice what-if scenario. What if we had listened to scientists right away and gotten our act together? Hard mode starts in 2020, and then extra hard mode basically simulates what if we do nothing until 2030, so you're right on the edge already. There's two ways for the game to end. The first is to survive to 2050. Then you kind of see where you ended up on the thermometer and if you managed to keep it under 1.5 degrees. The other way for the game to end is for you to go up in temperature so high that the thermometer metaphorically bursts. Then you're in big trouble and you have one turn left to fix it, which is really, really challenging, but it is possible.
Solutions is for players 10 and up, but the target audience is kids.
I was on a Clubhouse chat with Hank Rogers.
He's a video game developer and the entrepreneur behind Tetris.
He said something really fascinating. The only thing that gets people to quit smoking is their kids. No amount of government ads, the gross lungs on the packages of cigarettes does anything. People just ignore that. But when their children start begging them, please, mom, please, dad, please stop killing yourself, that's what actually gets people to quit.
Sam's group is focused on getting solutions into schools, and there's already evidence that this plan to set the youth on their elders is working.
We ended up sending out prototypes of the game to schools in the US, in Canada, even in Sweden, and we started getting these videos back showing kids getting super excited and really intensely interested in it. But one of our favorite stories is we sent the game to a school in Palm Beach, Florida, and the teacher had two of her grade 6 classes play the game, and both the classes ended up flipping over the reduced food waste card, which is honestly one of the most shockingly impactful solutions in the game. Both the classes independently decided to do class projects on reducing food waste, and they managed to reduce their food waste by about 3 kilograms a day. But not only did it affect this change in the cafeteria, the students ended up presenting the project to the faculty, and then the faculty got inspired to bring back a school garden that they had previously gotten rid of and start a school composting program. That's our end hope for the game, is that the game can inspire real-world action. One of the reasons that's so important is when most people think about climate solutions and what can I do, there's really two types of solutions that they think of. Personal solutions that they can take themselves, for example, maybe flying less or unplug your TV at night. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's these solutions that only governments or big corporations can take. But there's this sphere of solutions in between where a single individual or a group of individuals can have tremendous impact well beyond just themselves. And it's the difference, for example, between putting solar panels on your roof or doing a community solar program for your entire neighborhood, or between reducing food waste at home or reducing it in your entire cafeteria. And so our goal is to inspire players to take it further. On the back of each card, we have a QR code. If you scan that QR code, you can see resources to learn more about the solution, and then you can also see how to take action.
The funding for Solutions is coming from Kickstarter.
We had a tremendous initial response. We got funded in under 24 hours. That initial fundraising goal was the bare minimum to manufacture the smallest possible run of the game. And now we have further funding goals to develop full curriculums for elementary, middle school, high school, and university.
If you happen to hear this show before August 18th, 2021, you can go online to Kickstarter and lend your support.
What about your game, Wendy?
I thought you'd never ask. Our game, Evergreen, is also a cooperative board game with solutions cards, tokens, and the obligatory thermometer. But it's a little more down to earth, with real measures to reduce emissions and sequester carbon that we want to see in the county's climate action plan, and climate impacts based on local projections. After you play, there are action steps you can take right away, like calling your local city council person. But that's enough talk. Let's listen in on a game that just happens to include Brian, his partner Allison, and Emma and Harper, two young women who stayed at our house on their bike trip down the California coast.
A global climate summit just adjourned in failure. Despite scientists' plea to cut greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, world leaders leave without a plan. They go to a bar, get drunk, and decide to throw a dart at a map of the world, pledging every nation will cut emissions as much as the place where the dart lands. It happens to hit Humboldt County. You are a team appointed by your fellow citizens to cut local carbon emissions in half.
And they're off. Here's some of the high and low points of that game. I'll do some play-by-play commentary to fill in the gaps.
Mine is a Mediterranean diet.
Oh, I'm into that.
It's also pretty big.
Yeah. I say we do this.
Okay.
Yeah. I assume it's going to be voluntary. We can't force people.
Well, this is everybody in the county cuts their red meat consumption down to twice a month.
Definitely be controversial.
But some people can have none, and then the other people can have more.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you could sell offsets.
Meat credits.
Meat credits.
Sell my burger credit.
They've just flipped that card over to see the health savings.
$288 million.
Seriously?
Yes.
I have compost food waste. Yeah. This one would probably be pretty easy to convince people to participate
agree.
In.
Yeah. I say we go with that one.
Yeah.
Definitely put that one up here.
Now they're looking at shutting down our natural gas-fired power plant.
Replace 90% of PG&E plant with a big number of megawatts of clean energy and storage. It costs $40 million, and it's a chunky, chunky guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
I have an agreement.
Let's do this.
Too These late. Yellow ones seem...
Too late.
Too late.
Each round ends with a climate against humanity card, or two if they don't move fast enough.
Rising seas and groundwater infiltrate Eureka's sewer pipes. Sewage backflow. Into city streets and the bay.
Uh-oh.
The wastewater system must be upgraded. Cost $130
million. Oh, wow.
Ooh.
That's a spicy meatball. All right.
I have one that's just compost dairy manure, and it costs $5 million, and it prevents 35,000 tons of CO2. Uh-oh.
Do we have to get to this?
We better take some action.
Yeah. Or we're going to have to do two of these.
How do we feel about this one?
Hurry up.
I guess we do it.
Yes.
Wait, what's your
big deal? That's $70 million.
We're gonna buy
this. That's too expensive.
That's 25
too expensive. You're not gonna make it.
Right, let's do
it. Okay, were you a Gregory Moon?
Bought this.
The song is ending. Did we make it?
A wildfire in Six Rivers National Forest destroys over 1,000 homes in Willow Creek. Insurance dropped coverage there after the last fire. Property lost $300 million, which we do not have.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
So is that
red exclamation point.
Now that they're out of money, the infill zoning card they rejected before is starting to look better.
That's telling people they can't live outside of, like, the inner core of the town.
Once again, that's a little tough.
That's
hard
to tell people.
We don't really have a lot of options.
Yeah, which I guess is eventually how it's going to go with humanity. Yeah. Like, it sucks to tell you can't do these things, but if you don't, we'll all die. So
oh my God, yeah.
Can you please build your house over here? Because we're out of money and climate is creeping up on us.
You might have earned some. Flip it over.
Whoa, gnarly.
That puts us back in the positive.
The cyclists are advocating for the bike trails card.
I'm really curious to see what happens when we play this. I think it has we'll have a lot of benefits.
Yeah, let's muster the political will to make it happen.
Yeah, we have money for that.
We've got 12 million left. I hope we're seeing some growth here.
Well, just won the game.
Yeah.
Oh,
yay. We got the world is saved.
Wow.
Or at least Humboldt County is.
Yeah.
The thermometer is completely covered with solutions, but they won't stop till they've raked in those last savings.
Walking or biking short distances saves $57 million in health costs, which is crazy because it costs $58
million. Wow.
Even. Awesome. Well, we've still got money to fight another day. When that next climate crisis comes, be ready.
We have $69 million for the next climate crisis.
Perfect.
Good job, you guys.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a fun game.
I was surprised at how, it wasn't easy. But it was, manageable. The hardest part, I think, was figuring out how we would convince people to do things. And obviously that's not an easy feat, but I guess climate change has been such an existential threat, and this really nicely lays out things that are really concrete. And that was surprising to me. I thought we were going to lose, basically.
Yeah. So do you feel more hopeful?
Yeah.
Want to play? You'll find a link at our website to print out everything you need.
Along with links to play Earth games, support solutions on Kickstarter, and sign up for an alert when Daybreak hits the stores. All at cool-solutions.org.
Thanks for joining us for Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
Many thanks to our guests, Dargan Frierson, Matt Laycock, Sam Levock-Levy, Evergreen co-designers, Martha Walden and Nancy Ahara,
and our test players, Harper, Emma, Allison, and me.